We might make a start. It's 11. So we got an interesting topic today on third-party liability cap bonds and alternative risk transfer type products. Our speaker is James Sullivan. Brief bio on James. He is currently an actuary turned broker at Willis Re, responsible for developing new business relationships that are leveraged from creating innovative and technical solutions. And he's worked in direct and reinsurance markets, domestically and internationally. He used to be chief pricing actuary at a commercial insurer in London, and before that he was at Taylor Fry here in Australia. Just a reminder for the session, we got about a 40-minute session. James will speak for 30 minutes with enough time for Q&A. When you have questions, please use the mic because we will be recording the session. And also at the end, I'll remind you again, but use the speaker feedback in the app. But without further ado, please welcome James.
Thank you. So, good turnout, isn't it? It could be worse. So, yes, we're going to talk about third-party liability, motor third-party liability cat bonds today. And to my knowledge, there's been one placed in the international reinsurance market. Somebody in the room may have seen others, but to my knowledge, that's one. And I'll give you a case study of that cat bond, but want to put some groundwork into you guys before we get there. And that being, you know, how does this cat bond work, or why does insurance-linked securities, what was the birth of it, and why and how? And we'll talk about risk transfer and how that value chain is being disconnected. We'll talk about the size of the market and emerging risks in the casualty space, as well as the birth of the ILS, which was through property cat in the US. I'll touch on the Generali Horse Capital Motor Liability cat bond that was placed last year, and I'll give you some detail around that and how it's structured and how it works. Finally, we'll talk about future applications. Let's talk about risk transfer. Right? If we go to the value chain 101, right, what we have on either side of that top diagram is capital and risk. What happens is the risk needs the capital to support the uncertainty nature of that either book of business or that one account, one policy. What we have in the middle is insurance companies, brokers, reinsurance companies, retro, all sorts of things. And as the capital flows to that risk, each item in that middle bit takes a clip of the ticket. So every dollar that may be in the capital sense, the risk will only see, I don't know, 60 cents, 70 cents, maybe not even that, 40 cents. The capital and risks are sort of aligned, right? Capital wants a risk and return, absolute and diversified returns. They need liquidity, and they prefer short tail risks. Right. Buyers need indemnity, they need efficiency, and they need multi-year, they need certainty. What we've seen over the last 10, 15 years is that value chain has started to break. And what we've seen is the capital going direct to the risk. Now, you can think of that risk, as I said, as a single policy or as a pool of policies. Right? There may be an insurance company involved. There may be a broker involved. But that whole value chain of customer, insurance, broker, reinsurance, broker, retro, broker, capital is all being disconnected. And capital is going straight to the risk. That has led to insurance-linked securities. What we've seen, or what a typical ILS structure is this diagram. Most of you in the rooms are probably experts in this, but I'll go through it. That being the insurer, or the risk itself, sits here, pays an annual or a quarterly insurance premium into a special purpose insurer. And what's sitting inside that special purpose insurer is collateral from the capital markets. Right. That diagram, if you were to replace that diagram with risk, insurance policy, reinsurer, that would be the current value chain that we see it. The addition of a collateral account eliminates any credit risk. So that's the value for the insurer or the risk itself, as well as the collateral earning money market rates plus the additional premium from the reinsurance policy or the insurance policy is giving the capital investor that much better return than they otherwise would if they put it in the money market. Now, how big is the ILS market or insurance-linked securities market? Over the last 15 years, we've seen significant growth. It's approximated that the amount of capacity out there that's backed by ILS is somewhere in the order of about $75 billion. Now, to put that into comparison, the Australian cat market, property cat market, is approximately $30 billion. Globally, it's approximately $350 billion. So it's about 20%, 15 to 20% of capacity is insurance-linked securities, collateralized into some account. This significant growth over the years coincides with the lack of return that investors are receiving in the money markets. So it comes back to that added risk versus return that they're searching for has developed this industry of ILS. To put that into further perspective, we look at third-party capital, as I call it there, the ILS market is $75 billion. We compare that to the global bond market of almost $100 trillion. So it's very, very small, despite the growth that we've seen over the last 15, 20 years. Furthermore, this growth in reinsurance or insurance-linked securities, all this alternative risk transfer type of structure, is stemming from major pension funds reducing the amount that they allocate to, say, bonds and equity and increasing their exposure into these types of products. So where has all this growth come from? And I like this slide. I like this slide because 15, 20 years ago, ILS, insurance-linked securities, was dominated in the US on a parametric basis. So a parametric basis is we have a hurricane, that hurricane gets to a certain wind speed, and the bond would pay out. Right? Has nothing to do with indemnity. There's a lot of basis risk there. Over time, as ILS became more risk-centric and as capital markets became a lot more sophisticated in their modelling, they started to develop new triggers, the ultimate being indemnifying the insurer or the reinsurer. What gets paid by the insurer or reinsurer is indemnified by the cat bond, no basis risk. We have the development of industry loss indexes, model losses, and some form of hybrid. Right? still in the property space. Over time, and more recently, the emergence of property cat bonds has gone into casualty space, as well as new geographies. Mexico, Turkey, cat bonds that the government have bought based on earthquake risk. What is interesting, and what we'll go into over the next few slides, is this birth of the new perils of ILS. So if you haven't seen it, Credit Suisse issued a cat bond on their operational risk through Solvency II 3 years ago. That was to protect them for operational risk issues, fraud, fat fingers type scenarios, which saves them capital on their risk-based capital algorithm. The lottery, there's bonds out there, especially out through Gibraltar, on the European lotteries as well as the UK lotteries. Life insurance. And what we'll speak about over the next two slides is this Generali structure, which covers third-party motor liability. So it's called horse capital. Now, why is it called horse capital? Well, horse is the name of the special vehicle domiciled in Ireland, which holds and fund manages the collateral behind the capital investors. Generali engages horse capital to write this type of product. Now, what was this product? This product was a $250 million ILS, which is to mitigate the deterioration of the loss ratio of Generali. Now, for those who don't know Generali, Generali are one of the biggest insurers in the world. They write approximately $30 billion worth of premium, property casualty, globally. Dominated in Europe, obviously, they're an Italian company. They write $5 billion worth of motor liability. So our equivalent is CTP. And that is written in these seven countries: Italy, Germany, France, Austria, Spain, Czech Republic, and Germany. The motivation behind this structure from Generali is firstly to save them capital, but to seek different alternatives, different diversified structures as different from their traditional reinsurance panel. What Generali have created is a three-year cat bond that gets triggered based on the ultimate loss ratio of their third-party motor liability portfolio over those seven countries. This is very different to a stop-loss or quota share that you would buy from a reinsurer. This is a capital investor putting 255 million euros into a collateralized account that sits there for upwards of more than 3 years to protect the loss ratio of Generali's portfolio. The structuring involved many, many aspects. One being identifying return periods of a specific loss ratio, as well as a joint collaboration between the investment panel, the actuarial firm who did the modelling, as well as the broker who structured the deal. That created a large-scale educational roadshow. So this bond is not something that happens to occur overnight. There's a lot more involvement behind the scenes in, firstly, modelling the loss itself, education of the investment panel and the capital providers, as well as structuring the rules behind how the deal gets triggered. We'll look at the timeline first. Now, Generali structured a three-year cat bond covering periods 27, 2018 and 2019. And it's through that three-year period on an accident year basis that they will determine what their ultimate loss ratio is using modelling throughout an extension period up until a commutation time, right? Dictated by what the rules of that cat bond is. At that time, if the loss ratio, the ultimate loss ratio, falls anywhere between 90.5% and upwards of 97.25%, the cat bond gets triggered. Different layers of the cat bond, just like a typical reinsurance program. There's nothing new there. Except what's underlying this whole structure, this whole deal, is that the price for this was three times cheaper than what the reinsurers could manage. And why is that? Well, it comes back to that value chain. It also comes back to that this structure of this cat bond is so risk-centric. And what I mean there is that it indemnifies Generali on a whole account basis and what gets reported in their financial statements. It also provides the capital investors additional return as compared to what they receive in the money market. And that additional return in the first layer is a coupon of 12% with a return period of about 1 in 12. The second layer, a coupon of 6.25%, which is the reinsurance premium, and a top layer of a coupon of 4%. Is there any questions about that? Nope. So we've just got one more slide. Yes?
Sorry, I do have a question.
Yeah.
Does the structure give Generali capital relief, given that it's out of the money?
That's a good point. So Generali are Solvency II regulated, and they are required to hold capital up to a 1 in 250 year event, which includes well beyond this tower. That capital relief comes from the recognition of this reinsurance program.
So it's more to do with the cat element of capital, not nothing to do with premium, your general premium reserve risk.
No, right? Exactly. Yeah. Has nothing to do with your reserve risk or your premium risk. It has to do with your cat risk. Now, don't underestimate how big of a deal this is, because this is one of the first times we have seen a casualty cat bond placed in the capital markets, right? Which is a different to parametric US cat. And it's done on quite a large scale. Diversity is key here, 7 countries on a $5 billion portfolio. Something I didn't mention is that last bullet point. So despite the price of this deal being three times cheaper than what the reinsurance panels could offer, investment demand, when this first hit the market, increased 40%. So there is definite appetite out there in the global reinsurance market for this type of instrument. And then you can tell, €255 million of collateral sitting somewhere in some account that Horse Capital manage, protecting Generali for upwards of 3, 5, 6, maybe 10 years, is a significant investment from, as compared to the traditional property cat parametric structure deals. So we've got a last slide, and we talk about, well, what is the future have to do with this Generali deal and what we can bring to the Australian market? Well, there's no reason why the Generali cat bond cannot be restructured here in Australia. There's significant CTP exposures, there's significant workers' comp and long-term care. These deals are risk-centric. So they target the underlying drivers of the insurance concern. Whether or not that could be reputational risk, whether or not that could be inflation risk, discounting risk, size, frequency risk, it's irrespective. The fact remains that these capital type solutions are risk centric and can be manipulated such that they target the underlying concern of the insurer, which sometimes is not the indemnity or the loss ratio achieved on the portfolio. It also can be multiple triggers, right? Parametric indemnity, industry loss. That is a negotiation between the capital investor and the insurance policy itself. Other than that, we are done. Questions?
So they've been around in the property game for a while, the cat bonds. Why did it take so long for them to come in the casualty space?
I think it's a very good question. I think it has to do with the way the casualty space evolves in a much slower pace than property cat, right? So if you look at modelling of property cat, right, how many different models are out there that can determine an estimate of loss if you get hit by a 5 earthquake in Christchurch, right? There's tons. If you look at the casualty side, where's the modelling behind, say, a casualty cat? Where's the modelling behind an accumulation of Site C D&O exposures in Australia? That type of modelling is far behind the property space. Not to mention the property space is much larger than casualty too. So naturally people are more inclined to head that direction. Huh? Thirdly, property's short tail. Well, it should be short tail. it's yet to be determined with the most recent hurricanes in the US and earthquake in Christchurch in 2011. That's still continuing. But capital investors are more inclined to have short tail. Yeah? You've got to remember that this type of product, right, is collateralized. So if you're writing $100 million of exposure, that $100 million is sitting in account earning interest, which is at the call of the insurance policy. So unlike a reinsurer who has capital that's diversified across the globe, they don't allocate the $100 million of exposures into one single account, which the insurance company can noticeably decide to call upon whenever they need to. Any other questions?
So I've got a tech on the operation. Sorry. No, please.
So my question was that the collateralized amount in this Cat 1 case, how was that determined? Roughly, principle.
Is 255. The amount of collateral underlying the bond is the amount of exposure that is written.
Okay, so they need to collateral the full amount.
It's 100%.
Yes.
Exactly.
And then the coupon rate is actually on that amount. Yeah. So essentially, it's almost like the coupon rate is a rate on line in cash terms. Right. So how is that 3 times cheaper than reinsurance? That's a pretty good rate.
Your question is very valid. I can't tell you what the motivation of the reinsurance was when pricing this cat bond, except to say that this bond was cheaper, three times cheaper than the reinsurance market.
I can see perhaps overall in terms of structure there may be a challenge to appetite to certain reinsurance companies, just the way it's structured. The other question I have, you mentioned something like it's based on financial year, but on this one, it's actually a single line, essentially.
Should I say financial year?
Yeah.
Accident year. Accident year.
Yeah, because of financial year, it looks like it's on accident year basis, so it's not...
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, that relief. It's definitely not. No, it's accident year basis. It's a three-year term, so... The triggers is accumulated over that 3 year period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you could have a bad year, you have a good year. Depends on the aggregation of those 3 years.
So it's the ultimate loss ratio for all 3 years combined.
That's right.
So going back in the previous round, you mentioned about the total expected return by the cap bond market. I think in the more big picture before this slide.
That one.
Expectations of that one?
No.
It was to do with the expectations, the one that this gentleman was asking a question. Expectations of the Cat 1 IOS providers on return, basically, where it's actually X percent on the return on earned on the asset.
Oh, yes. Okay. That one.
Yeah.
That structure.
So any... I guess from a capital investor's point of view, they're essentially pension funds.
Yep.
Any ideas on what their total expectations is on their fund? So the cash flow is essentially the full amount of the limit they're putting down.
Yep.
So what would be their expectations? I think there's range of expectations on their return on their collateralized fund there. So essentially the total of your yield plus X percent, what would that number roughly be?
Depends on the custodian.
If you move away from looking at deal to deal basis, we're looking at a big picture, right? You're looking at how much
in aggregate
this supply is growing. You know, pension fund is driven by they have alternative assets where they can put their money in equity, which they'll be getting 10 to 15%,
something like that.
Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah. So cap bond, in a sense, IOS is more risky than that. You're looking at you putting in one bond.
Is
yes,
it?
If they put in many bonds, and they get a diversification benefit.
Yep.
But when they're looking at individual deal, what would be the expectations on the return on that deal, or overall on average on a diversified basis?
I don't think I can answer that question with any clarity. I mean, you'll need to ask a fund manager or a pension fund.
Yeah.
Are you trying to rank asset classes?
In terms of risk and return, it should be above corporate debt.
If
would it be actually above equity in some sense?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought it would have sat in between debt and equity.
I would imagine, as is a common rather than question, I would imagine that sits between equity and bond in terms of claims the company actually rank below. So you get this paid before you get before the equity holder get paid. But circling back to your question, I think from my perspective, you look at the absolute return from a pension fund perspective, it may not necessarily 100% tick the boxes saying achieving 15% on average, but I think the big value for pension fund is to have that 24% there is uncorrelated with all the other asset classes. So if I'm a fund manager, I would look at diversified return and undiversified return. And then I'll judge on that matter what's my overall return versus my diversified risk portfolio and say whether that 24% makes sense or not. So it's rather used as an instrument to diversify a portfolio rather than chasing for absolute return. I think that's probably different from the traditional insurance market when you have a set 12% return on capital, 15% return on capital, even in a stock market, maybe 2%. But
I agree with your point. I think they certainly look at the diversification into IOS market to actually increase its attractiveness with the rest of the traditional asset classes. But even on that, we'll come to a view on what is the expected return on the ROS. I guess the point is that, yes, there's a lot of, you know, okay, that you can mention there's trillions of supplies of ROS capitals, but the rate, there is a certain rate of return, and I think we need to have a better understanding about that expected rate of return and how it correlates with other classes. And from the investor's point of view, this is a bit of a hit and miss, so that certainly on its own, the risk is not, cannot be underestimated, yeah. And it does have a diversification effect. So I guess it's comparing to that expected return to the expected return of regions, companies. Well, on one hand, the cap bonds and RS, they're using collateralized capital, which cannot be used again. And regions companies does have the benefit of diversified capital.
The other thing I thought that had come across my mind is that I think for pension funds to invest in this, the return is a relative return for them. So if my choice is to invest my money in the equity market, which in a down market is probably 5% return, and I suddenly got something here with 6.5%, I'll do part of my portfolio here because it's sort of enhanced the overall return. But that's probably where I would look at the total return. It's almost coming from a relative perspective rather than, you know, I want 15% return on capital for, like, guaranteed regardless of the cycle of the market. So that's what the individual investor or pension fund, they will have a different investment mindset to the overall running of insurance company in terms of shareholders.
I agree. Like, yeah, risk-free rates having...
Yeah, it's a relative to the risk rate, yeah. Risk-free rate, and that risk, you know, we call that equity risk margin. So this is probably risk margin from the... reinsurance risk.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to understand.
So that's why I thought this question is a bit difficult to answer in terms of what is the return that they're chasing. Like, I'm sure there is the answer. I don't know the answer, but...
You don't ask easy questions.
Yeah.
I'll ask a different question. You said that there's no impediment to this in Australia, yet, I guess, the will. Is there regulatory recognition there in Australia that they actually get the capital release that they've got in?
That's a discussion that is yet to be had.
Yeah.
But what you can say is that there has been recognition for capital relief when you collateralise a loss portfolio transfer or some other types of, you know, alternative arrangement. So. I wouldn't think that there would be any problems, right? Having the collateral there is very, very powerful, right? Because it eliminates your credit risk, which then changes the dynamic of you needing AAA paper or AA plus or whatever, the collateral sitting there, and you can see the collateral.
Is it fair to say, though, that in this market, you know, say if you're looking at your big players like an IAG or a Suncorp, who have, like, say, 10% of the book or less, or 5% of the book, CTP, that if they bought a CTP cap bond, it's not actually going to have a big effect on the capital relief anyway, it's just because our portfolio mix is more one that you're looking at the monoline guys? Or?
You ask a good question, which is, you know, IAG and Suncorp, they're going to be so dominated on the property cat in regards to the way they use their capital in a prospective sense, retrospectively low. They've got so much reserve sitting on their balance sheet, which is so capital intensive in these long-term, specifically CTP and workers' comp. And the sell to a CTP provider here in Australia is not necessarily the capital relief on the prospective basis, because it's going to be swamped by that property. But what it is it's the dampens the volatility of profitability, or the loss ratio, mm-hmm. I think is much more important, especially for a regime in Australia who's been, we've had risk-based capital for 15 years so far. Right. What the interesting dynamic about Generali is that Solvency II has only been introduced last year, the year before, 2015. So the need to quantify capital based on risk is a fairly new thing in the European market, and even more premature in the US. Here, we've had it for so long that the take-up rate of something like this is going to be more skewed to the profitability spectrum than the capital.
So given the complex nature of this, how long was the actual duration to put it together?
There was approximately 12-month lead-up time. Right? The motivation for Generali was outside the reinsurance discussion. Right? It was the CFO, it was the finance department wanting alternative solutions to what they could see as a specific need. And the change... Don't underestimate that the structuring, right, was highly actuarial in focus. So there is a conglomerate of models sitting behind the estimation of the ultimate loss ratio for this deal. And what is neat about this is that the bond itself is triggered based on the financial statements that Generali publish. So it is a 100% indemnity of Generali. There's no basis risk there.
And in this case, who are the actual investors? Was that Silent?
That is Silent.
Tell you after a few years.
I'll tell you who's the advisor.
You could have some guesses, right?
Yeah.
I think I'd give it away with this slide, which is key because it's asset liability matching, isn't it? Right? Is that I want to invest in a bond of 10 years. Where's my liability? My liability is a pension fund that I need to pay out on in 10 years.
So you're saying that the investors, whoever they are purely going to agree with valuation of Generali's actuarial? Is that how it's structured, though, when you say it's indemnity?
I'm sure there'll be some complications in the assessment of the ultimate loss ratio on both sides. Now, it is not the actuarial teams inside Generali who quantify the loss ratio. It is a third-party provider.
There's usually investment banking advisor involved, which may be associated with the broker.
And it should also be mentioned, these things are tradable, right? So there's a secondary market that you can go on, you can trade your Generali Class C notes to somebody else who wants them, right? So it's not something that you buy and you let sit. It's something that you can buy, you can sell, you can trade, and you can continually do that till the maturity of the bond. Just like debt markets. There's no difference.
Just a follow-up question on that. You mentioned it's tradable, but how deep is the market for a single cap bond? And doesn't it need to be broken up into smaller chunks to be traded?
Underlying each of these layers, there would be different dynamics. There would be different bonds under each of these layers, right?
Yeah,
that's right. That 5% of layer C or 5% of layer B or 1% of class A, and you could trade that. How liquid?
It's been an option trader myself in the past. Even a lot of those won an option issued by Macquarie Bank, etc. The market is very, very thin, and it's controlled by a few key investment banks.
Agreed.
So in reality,
agreed.
Secondary market for that one.
I don't think if you put your capital into this bond, you'll on the top of your list is not that it's going to be traded, right? But as these things grow, as this diagram starts to expand and as the market starts to mature, and you never know.
All right. Please join me in thanking Jane.